Watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000 Watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 17th of February, Anno Domini 2008, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, a couple of things you can probably lose. And we'll start with a piece of information for all you Rochesterians out there. I know that all those of you who catch Soundbites on the internet, particularly the half a dozen or so of you in the Netherlands, probably are not going to be interested in this one particularly, but it doesn't actually affect me either, which kind of ports me up. Free wireless internet access is on its way to downtown Rochester, parts of Greece, and parts of Pittsburgh, thanks to a new service paid for by Frontier Communications. That announcement was made Thursday at Frontier headquarters. It's a public-private partnership between Frontier, the city of Rochester, and Monroe County. You'll be able to pick up a free Wi-Fi signal in some spots. In other parts of the coverage zone, you'll have to pay for it. Frontier invested $3 million in this project. County Executive Maggie Brooks says it puts Rochester on the digital forefront. If we agreed that we want more business in our community, then this is critical for us. If we agreed that we want to keep the businesses that are already here, this is a critical initiative for us. Frontier put up about 150 Wi-Fi towers to make up this network. You can already pick up a signal in parts of Pittsburgh and Greece, while the Rochester portion should be up and running in coming days. If you're not in a free Wi-Fi zone, the charges range from about $5 an hour to $30 for a month-long pass. Personally, I'm pretty torqued off about
this. I was going to say, and how close are you?
According to the Rochester map, there is a tower just outside the range of my house. Come on, Frontier, you couldn't just add one measly tower,
and maybe
one more measly...
And Maggie Brooks is standing out on the corner going...
Maggie, I'm looking at you.
We'll get some hams together. We'll build you a cantenna.
Thank you. That's exactly what I need.
Well,
the last tower, the range ends here, and my house is here. It's just...
A block away.
Your neighbor across the street gets it.
Yeah, and they're sitting out on the porch going, nah, 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 nah.
That's probably what this Rochester Public Wi-Fi Network thing is we've been seeing here in the studio.
Right.
We haven't been able to connect to it, but we've been seeing it's there.
Right. And there are, I have a series of PDF maps that have been put out that show where the coverage is. So if you know where I live, you can see just how stinking, rotten close I came to getting free Wi-Fi. Son of a pup. Oh,
tell
man.
Us how you really feel.
Well, it's kind of annoying in its own little way. I will give that to Steve so that he can put that up and we can all see just how much coverage we're not going to get. Now, we don't know anything else about this at this moment. We don't know if this is just initial coverage and there will eventually be more like, oh, say, my house, or if there's going to be, you know, other towns that are part of this. I don't know anything about this yet. I just saw this recently, and nobody has returned my call, probably because they don't want to yell at them for stopping one tower short.
Who was that county legislator that we interviewed a couple of years ago where she was trying to get this pushed forward and was meeting so much resistance?
Yep.
I hope
yep.
she's involved with this, or at least sitting back and saying, I told you so.
Yeah, right. So we'll see. We'll see where that brings us. And like I said, I'll get this to Steve in just a moment. He can start putting that up. It's a series of PDFs that will show you Rochester, Greece, and Pittsburgh.
So, I found the ones on some of the local news sites. They all have stories about it. There's apparently no central point on the city government page about it.
Yeah, that's it. I just found it on one of the local channels, and that's where I saw it. All right, here, I'll pass that over to you, and you can do whatever you got to do. Steve also was kind enough to bring in a MacBook Air, which apparently has gotten lost already. What? Oh, there it is. All right.
There it is.
I didn't see it sitting there behind the counter.
Right.
So it's one of those edge-on devices where you don't see it when it's edge-on. You have to look at the side.
All right. Yeah. It is. It's a stealth machine. Well, actually, I don't know if I actually put it in the news anywhere today. No, I don't believe I did.
That was the big news last week.
Right, it was the big news last week. But this week, the folks at Lenovo have announced that they're putting out their own air-sized laptop.
Right. Somehow Apple got Intel to reduce the size of the Core 2 chip in it by like 50%. It's so tiny.
Yeah.
So a bunch of other companies have jumped on it too. And that was the biggest thing about it. Like 3/4 of the size of this, or the space of the interior of the computer, is the battery. The logic board itself is like 1 inch by 6 inches.
Yeah.
For everything the computer does.
Yeah, it's astonishing.
It's so tiny.
Astonishing. But the Lenovo one is a little bit thicker because it does actually include an Ethernet port, a real USB ports, several of them. It has a DVD drive. It has a removable battery. And it's still only like 1/4 inch thicker. And it costs a little more. Apparently, see, it seems apparently to come with a 64 gigabytes of flash memory.
Well, yeah, Apple makes that an option on the Air. It's a $1,000 option for a 64 gig flash drive,
right?
Which is smaller than the 80 gig drive it normally comes with. So you can pay an extra $1,000 to get a smaller drive.
Right, but it's flash memory, it's much faster.
Really, really fast, yeah.
Right, and that's what this Lenovo will come with. So it is at about $1,000 more than the Air.
Right.
Because it comes with all the stuff that you'd have to pay extra for on the Air to get pretty much the same deal. Oh, about 16, 15 people in the... Francis is not on the chat at this point. See? See? That's... I'm there. I'm right there. That's my house just there, past that purple circle.
And there's your neighbor across the street on the porch waving at you. Saying, too bad!
All right, we might as well go to the phones now since I'm thoroughly porked off. Our first call is John from Canandaigua. Welcome, John. You can't get it either.
No, I can't. The problem I have is my Dell laptop is on, and I don't know if these three problems are related, but when the defrag goes to about 70%, I try to put it onto defrag, and for days and days and days, I can't get it back. I'm running the defrag program. I minimize it.
What? Wait a minute. What operating system are you running?
XP Media.
You don't need to run defrag.
Not often. Maybe once
worry.
A year.
Yeah, I mean, maybe every couple of years.
And the reason it doesn't run is because Windows is doing so many other things that it can't run. You may have to, in fact, you usually have to run it from a command line, boot into safe mode command line only to run it.
Yeah,
and...
That's even worse. Norton puts so much more crap in your computer that it doesn't have a chance to become idle enough to run something like a defrag.
Yeah, the problem with a defrag is it really needs to own the hard drive. And if anything writes to the hard drive, it either has to start over or it has to wait until it thinks that other thing is done.
Okay.
And if anything is running, like, oh, say, your antivirus, or, oh, say, any one of 1,000 programs that Microsoft loads in the background, and you'll never finish a defrag. You could try it in safe mode, particularly if you disconnect yourself from the internet first, which is what really makes it safe mode.
Okay, a similar issue I have is the defrag off, I'm not doing anything, it goes to screensaver. And then an hour later when I try to nudge it back to the desktop, the screensaver freezes. So I have to reboot.
How long have you waited?
Sometimes it's an hour, sometimes.
No, I mean, after you try to get back to the desktop and it freezes?
Yeah.
How long have you waited before you rebooted?
Not very long at all.
Yeah, that's probably part of the problem. One of the things that's probably going on is I suspect that your antivirus program has been set to run every time the screensaver goes on.
Yeah, run when idle and the screensaver
goes on. Run when idle, right. So what's happening is you say, I want to start, and the screensaver says, I got to finish this file first.
The other thing that can happen is a fight between the BIOS energy saver sleeping and Windows energy saver sleeping.
Well, not so much it the could, BIOS, is in Windows, the power options.
Right, power options in Windows versus power options in BIOS.
Yep.
And we see this on the Mac a lot, too. When you go to wake your machine up, it takes maybe 30 seconds or a minute because the hard drive has to spin up, the CPU has to wake up, the screen has to wake up, the mouse has to wake up, so
well,
it may take a minute.
Well, that's where you're better off on a laptop. To go into the power options, whether you're using the Windows ones or whether some of them have their own, like Toshiba and that, and you change the settings to when it's plugged in, to change it so that it never spins down the hard drive, or goes into hibernation and all that stuff, because quite often, well, you don't need it because you're plugged in. You don't have to worry about conserving power. So you just turn those features off, because Windows doesn't really like those features and trying to wake up from them. It has quite a bit of trouble.
And you don't need a screensaver. You're not going to get burned in on the
no.
screen.
No, that was the old days.
Not on an LCD. CRTs can be burned in, but an LCD can't. A plasma can, and a CRT can, but an LCD can't.
Okay, so my desktop and laptop.
You're good.
Well, and the other thing is, if you're not going to use it for a couple hours, put the whole machine to sleep yourself, or just shut it down.
And I thought restart kind of wears things out here.
It does. Leaving it on wears it out, too. So it's
6 of one, yep. Half a dozen of the other.
All right, that sounds great. Thanks very much.
Okay. And wearing it out might be 6 months off a 10-year life. Okay. Yeah, so it's...
I'll be dead by then.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks very much.
All right, you're thanks. Because it is 10 running years, theoretically.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, that's... We get that every once in a while. What's better, leave it on or turn it off? What are you...
It's just like anything else.
What makes you happy?
Yeah. Yep.
I did find some more information at a different news site on the Rochester Wireless. If you are already a Frontier customer, you can get the public wireless for $9.99 a month. If you're not a Frontier customer, you can buy it for $1 a day or $30 a month. Or if you just need quick one-time access, it's $5 an hour.
That's still not bad.
And there are free spots, including Pittsford Plaza, Grease Ridge Mall, and Rochester City Hall.
How about the public market?
Well, it says 6 spots in Monroe County, including these 3. So why didn't you take the next sentence and put the other 3
right,
in?
Right.
Keep you guessing.
Right. I'd love to, have it at market.
You might.
Maybe I wouldn't. I already get enough. I already get enough nonsense at market. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of your phone calls. It is 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Hello.
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 Hello. Hello. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Back to the phones in a moment. But, and this may now be redundant in Rochester, but in the rest of the country, at least, it should be fine. There's a new Wi-Fi provider coming to your local Starbucks, and this one is offering some of its services for free, outmaneuvering its smaller rival, T-Mobile. AT&T announced on Monday a new partnership with the coffee giant to start offering its own brand of Wi-Fi services this spring. Once the rollout is complete, those who own Starbucks cards will be able to browse for up to 2 hours free at 7,000 Starbucks locations in the U.S. Coffee drinkers without a Starbucks card can purchase tiered access to the AT&T Wi-Fi network at Starbucks for $4 for 2 hours. Monthly membership will also be offered at $20 a month, which compared to T-Mobile's current rates of $6 an hour, $10 a day, and $30 a month. Monday's deal also means AT&T is now set to completely replace T-Mobile as the main Wi-Fi provider at various U.S.-based Starbucks locations. The relationship between T-Mobile and Starbucks will all but end once the rollout is complete. This was a part of a larger strategic decision on our part, a Starbucks spokes individual said, adding that AT&T was simply an ideal partner who also happened to have provided Starbucks with point of sale and other store operating systems for 10 years. As such, the Wi-Fi deal was characterized as an expansion of an existing successful relationship, not a condemnation of T-Mobile and its services. If you're an iPhone owner and wondering how the new deal affects you, apparently the answer is not at all. In September, Apple announced a new partnership with Starbucks and T-Mobile to let iPhone and iPod Touch users access T-Mobile's hotspots for free in order to download and listen to music via the iTunes Wi-Fi Music Store. That iTunes Wi-Fi Store partnership is still in effect, but will continue under AT&T's Wi-Fi service. Other than that, iPhone owners shouldn't expect any other preferential treatment or special access at Starbucks in the near term. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Gary from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Gary. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I think I may have screwed up the installation of a CDRW. I've got a dual boot machine, runs Windows 98 and Linux. I installed the CD writer. When I first installed it, Windows plug and play slot, gave it its drive number, et cetera, so the BIOS and everything looks good. It's also the master with a slave being the CD-ROM that came along with the machine. When I installed the Nero software, the CD writer disappeared. Can't find it in Windows Explorer. It's not there in the device manager. It's still there in the BIOS. The next thing that happened, just to try to find out what did happen, I tried the MS-DOS software that came along with it just to see if the machine would still find it. It did. Then it popped up as the drive that was designated in. But once you remove the software for the MS-DOS running, it disappears again. Hello?
Yeah, if you were watching us on TV, you'd sit there and see the blank look on our faces.
All right, so it works when you install the DOS software that came with it.
Yeah, and it will run like the CD-ROM that it says that the DOS software would do.
Right, mm-hmm. And it works fine under Linux?
Oh, yeah, works fine under Linux.
The problem is 98 really did not understand the drivers for this.
Well, it said it was 98 MEXP.
Right,
yeah, but it can see a lot of things.
It required that. Yeah, it's 98 compatible with the drivers.
There are no other drivers because it says it works with whatever 98 has, and then you just have to install the rest of the Nero software to make it rewritable. Rewrite 5.
Right.
Yeah, 98 probably only sees it as a CD reader.
Yeah.
Are you using the latest version of Nero?
The one that came with it, which was Nero 6.
That's odd.
There still could be an incompatibility there as far as, I mean, they can say in theory that it's supposed to work.
Yeah, it first did. I put it in.
I'm saying, though, is maybe one of the updates that you might have done to another product or another program.
The only thing I screwed up that maybe is that when I put in the Nero software, I put it in the CD-ROM, not in the CD writer.
Well, it doesn't matter what drive you use to install the software.
Yeah, it doesn't matter as far as the software.
Yeah, I've taken my Windows 98 disk, looked for any corrupted files, etc., found one in the setup DLL, and that was I did correct that, but again, nothing happened.
You said the CD writer is master and the CD reader is slave?
The CD writer is master, the CD ROM, ROM.
Right, yeah,
slave.
The CD reader. Have you tried reversing that? Make the CD reader the master and the CD writer the slave?
Yes, I have, and I've done cable select. And.
Oh, that could be an issue. One of the drives, we see this on Western Digital hard drives, they have to be cable select. And if you put it on a bus with another device that can't be cable select, then it doesn't work.
PJ Drive?
Western Digital.
Oh, Western Digital.
They
yeah,
want to be cable select. But if you have an old drive that has to be master slave, it won't work with a drive that has to be cable select.
I use new ones with master
slave. But yeah, it's mostly the older stuff. We're trying to add
so
a new drive to an old computer.
So you're saying you should try removing?
Yeah, try removing the CD reader. So
the original CD reader. I don't think that's
the issue. And make the CD writer
a
single
issue.
Drive.
I think there's a DLL that's not happy. Because it was working before,
and it works
the cabling
under Linux.
Hasn't changed at all. It's got to be a DLL file in the old Windows 98 that got changed or altered. That's why it's now choking and not working.
Replaced by something else.
If you remove Nero, does it come back?
No, I've removed Nero. I've done everything. I've done a registry correction.
See, I think it's one of the older files from Windows 98
that Nero replaced, and it doesn't. Yeah. And Windows doesn't feel like it has to unreplace it again.
Exactly.
Okay, so is there something I can do, or do I have to really dig, or can I load Windows 98 over 98? You see, this is
you
like
try that.
This chain.
That I would try. That would probably be the next best bet.
Okay.
Put 98 over 98.
Okay, which means I'll have to do a backup, but do I have to get rid of a lot of other programs? So I read in one place I have to get rid of my antivirus.
No.
Well, it's often a good idea to temporarily turn off your antivirus so it doesn't think a real install is a virus trying to attack Windows.
But you don't have to uninstall it.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, in the MS config, you can disable it.
Or even in whatever the program is, there's often a stop temporarily command.
Yep.
The trick is remembering to start it again.
Yeah. Right. Write it down that you have to do that.
Yeah.
All right. Let us know how that works out, Gary.
That's one of the problems of trying to run an older OS with newer hardware is you continually run into issues like that.
Yeah.
There's apparently no 1130 news today?
No. We knew that. He and I knew that.
Dave's waiting for the break.
He's sitting there going,
all right, now hold on. If you have to trust one of two people to give you the break information, Rob or Dave, which one are you going to look at? Dave waves his hands constantly.
You know what? I apologize. I used the wrong hand signal. I did this when I meant to do that. But instead, I'll do this.
I'm sorry. I know what.
Yeah, the universal gesture, we all understand.
Yeah. Thank you.
Pick your gestures.
I apologize. I didn't mean to throw Dave off. We'll take another call. What do you think?
Let's take another call. And that call would probably be Dave, Mike from Buffalo. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Hi there, guys.
Pick on me.
What I do is I have a daughter that's serving in Northern Africa.
God bless you.
And what happens is I record her show and send them by DVD.
Right.
And she has a laptop that's Vista, and she can play them on there. And I'll tell you what I do, and then see if you can help me do it better. How's that? Okay. On the video capture part, I use an ATI all-in-one dirt. Okay.
Yeah.
And with that, I can either record it with ATI software or with Neuro. And I don't know if there's something better that I can use with that, or it's the best, you know, that I can get. I've been using the both of them, really, just to see whether there was a difference. I couldn't see much of a difference between the two.
And well, how do you define better?
Yeah.
You can make better
quality.
You can make better video quality, but then the file size will be bigger,
bigger.
And take longer to transmit through the internet.
No, I send them.
He sends them by DVD.
Okay, well, all right. Well, then you have to compress them again to fit on the DVD. So you have several different layers of compression involved, depending on how long the video is.
It's a trade-off.
How much you want to compress it to
fit
on the DVD.
If it's a one-hour TV show, you can probably record it at a very high rate.
Yeah.
Very low compression, I mean.
Right.
I haven't had a problem with size because I can just, you know, like you said, the most I'm doing is an hour or 2 hours at a time.
Right.
It's not a big.
But you're limited by several things. First is the quality of the card you bought. The ATI All-in-Wonder is a very good card, but it's not going to be, I don't believe that it's actual, you know, DVD quality. Because
there is some compression.
Right.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, the less compression you use, the better the quality of the picture. No matter what program you're using to do it with. Neuro is a very good program, but I would suspect that the ATI software will give you the best. I mean, it's matched to the machine, right?
So right.
Theoretically, it would be better.
And there's always a trade-off between file size and compression. I've seen DVDs that have really crappy video because it's so highly compressed.
Right.
And then DVDs that look really great because they aren't compressed as much. It's usually the ones that try to get 27 hours of extra footage on it. And,
right.
Yeah.
This is probably the same question, but the format that I use is ATI's DVD-High, which I think stands for high density.
Okay.
It may mean high quality, or it may mean high compression. We don't know.
Yeah.
Well, the best quality that I can play back comes out of the DVD-High. If you got any suggestions for a better format, you know, and it's a format, it doesn't play on a DVD player, it plays on her laptop.
Well, yeah, to play on a DVD player, it has to be MPEG 2.
Right.
So if you're... Right, if you're playing it on a computer, MPEG 4 is it the newer, better quality?
When
video.
You burn it to DVD, are you burning the actual program, or are you just burning the MP4? Because if you leave it as just I've transferred the MP4 from my laptop to the DVD without turning it into a DVD, you might retain higher quality.
What I do now is it's MPEG 2, and I make a data DVD. Out of it.
Right.
And that works and seems to work with hers, you know, seems to be compatible with
her. Chris may actually have an answer for you here.
Mike, have you heard of MPEG Stream Clip?
No.
It's a program that does file conversions for video files. It will be able to take your MPEG 2 that you've captured with your ATI card and then convert it to virtually any other type of format you like and will give you the option of giving your daughter the MPEG 4. AVI files, there are too many Ogg Theora, because it's right. Video. You
will never get a better signal than the original.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Agreed. You're always going to lose something, but the software will give you the option of how much data do you want to throw away. And frankly, if you convert an MPEG 2 to an MPEG 4 format, you're not going to notice.
I don't. I just move it onto the CD.
Right. If you're just moving the MPEG 2 onto the CD, that is the best quality you're going to get.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Okay. I was just wondering about the
because of no conversion.
High, whether there was something, because I see one called SVGA format. you know, I didn't know whether it was better or worse.
Well, that's a monitor size. SVGA is 800 by 600 pixels.
I know, and ATI's got a format, a DVD, like a, well, a video format that says that. That's why I tried,
if you use that, it will fill an 800 by 600 monitor. Okay. So if you want to be full screen. The other thing that may make effect on the quality is, even though it's MPEG 2, it depends on what compression it's using, either in the camera, in the recorder, in the video card. You can get a highly compressed MPEG 2, or you can get a low compressed MPEG 2 and end up with different quality and different file sizes.
Right. Here's what you need to do. We could go on adding this back and forth for days. Here's what you need to do. Take your software and set it to the lowest compression possible and take a look at what kind of file that gives you, both in size and in quality. That will be the best you can get from that card. If there's a RAW format, try that.
Yeah, raw video is 30 megs a second, is it?
My point is, the less you compress, the better the quality. And if you record a RAW, that should tell you what the very best quality that card is capable of. Give that a try and then see how far down you want to go and still keep decent quality. But that's the only way you're going to know. Because I don't have an ATI card here to play with. But so you'll have to do that part yourself. But do those tests and we'll see. All right, our next caller is David from SOTUS, New York. Welcome, David. What's your question?
Hi, I just bought a brand new HP 17-inch laptop, and I want to save the battery. What's the best way to maintain the battery on the laptop?
Take it out.
I beg your pardon?
Never use it.
Yeah.
Take it, charge it fully, take it out, and run off the power.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. That is,
that's the easiest way, yeah.
Otherwise, you just replace it every few years.
Apple has,
of course, you can't do with the MacBook Air. All right, go ahead.
Well, you can.
You gotta send it back to Apple.
Apple has a really neat.
That's not solving his problem.
Apple has a really neat article on their website about lithium-ion batteries, how the technology works, the best way to maintain them, how to keep them performing the best. The big thing with lithium-ion batteries is they have a recharge cycle. If you use it for an hour and then charge it for an hour, you know that counts as part of a cycle. And typically, lithium-ion batteries will last for 400 or 500 cycles. So the less often you discharge it, the longer it will last. However, once a month or so, you should discharge it completely and then charge it completely to maintain the chemical workings of the battery, the crystal buildup. I'll post that on our website, too. So it's not specifically the Apple's batteries. It's any lithium-ion battery.
Right, right. So if you just leave it plugged in all the time, it shouldn't ever be a problem?
Generally speaking, yes. The battery will last longest if it's not being used, and if you've got it plugged into the wall, it's not being used during that time. When you need portable operation, unplug it and use the battery, but when you don't need it to be battery powered, plug it in the wall.
Cool. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 40 minutes after the hour, Soundbites 1180 WHAM.
Amalgamated Association of Morons, Local 6 and 7/8.
The AAM, ladies and gentlemen, that's us. Welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. We, of course, pronounce it AAM. I'm not sure why, but we do. The AAM. Or AAM. It might be that. That's probably better. All right. I hope you're all sitting down. Google has an announcement, ladies and gentlemen. The web is dangerous. I know, shocked me too, but here it is. The web is scarier than most people realize, according to research published recently by Google. The search engine giant trained its web crawling software on billions of web addresses over the past year, looking for malicious pages that tried to attack their visitors. They found more than 3 million of them, meaning that about 1 in 1,000 web pages is malicious, according to Niels Provost, a senior staff software engineer with Google. Those web-based attacks called drive-by downloads by security experts have become much more common in recent years as firewalls and better security practices by Microsoft have made it harder for worms and viruses to directly attack computers. In the past year, the websites of Al Gore's An Inconvenient Truth movie and the Miami Dolphins were hacked, as well as the MySpace profile of Alicia Keys. All of these were used to attack visitors. Criminals are getting better at this kind of work. They built very successful automated tools. And the bad guys are exceptionally good at automating their attacks. In response, Google has stepped up its game. One of the reasons it has been scouring the web for malicious pages is so that it can identify drive-by download sites and warn Google searchers before they visit them. Nowadays, about 1.3% of all Google search queries list malicious results somewhere on the first few pages. Some of the data surprised Niels Provost. When we started going into this, I had the firm intuition that if you go to the sleazier parts of the web, you are in more danger. It turns out that the web's nice neighborhoods aren't necessarily safer than its red light districts. We looked into this, and indeed we found that if you ended up going to adult-oriented pages, your risk of being exposed to malicious software was slightly higher, he said, but there really wasn't a huge difference. Staying away from the disreputable part of the internet really isn't good enough, he noted. Another interesting finding, China was far and away the greatest source of malicious websites. According to Google's research, 67% of all malware distribution sites are hosted in China. The second worst offender, the U.S. at 15%, followed by Russia, 4%, Malaysia, 2.2%, and Korea, 2%. All right, I'm talking to you, United States of America. You used to pride yourself in being number one. Get off the stick, get on the ball, and get cracking.
We've known that for years.
Or the terrorists, what?
Yeah, the hookers in the better neighborhoods just cost more.
So says Steve. It's Steve Ray.
When I worked downtown here, there was always this big thing about...
You know, and there's no disclaimer for that, because if I said I have no knowledge of the cost of hookers in better neighborhoods, that doesn't actually help me any.
Yeah, I know. That's why it's better leave that one alone.
I'm just walking away from that.
Yeah, I wouldn't touch it.
When I was working downtown here, there was always this big thing, you know, a few years ago, there were big things about cleaning up Lyle Avenue. And then, like, 6 months later, it was cleaning up whatever the next street over Lyle Avenue was, and they went back to Lyle, you know, so back and forth between Lyle and Otis and Verona. And So just wait, you know, wait a week and they'll be back where they were.
You can send your complaint letters, attention to Steve Ray
WHAM. Yeah, right.
He speaks from experience.
Yeah, next caller is Bob from Greece. Bob, what's your question?
Well, I used to have Boxio Easy CD and DVD creator on the computer. The basic version came with the computer. Upgraded to version 6. Had no reason to upgrade from that. It was doing everything I needed to do, especially unlike the ability to format the disk and what have you. And I always did format them and always included the UDF reader in case I needed to look at it on another computer. All of a sudden, my computer crashed and Windows came back and said that the reason it crashed was a driver from Roxio or whatever. Once the Roxio site tried to download that driver to correct the problem, and I wasn't able to actually do it. I was able to do it in safe mode somehow. To make a long story short, I can't install BASIC back on this computer. I can't install Creator 6 back on this computer. Some of the disks that I created, like I said, with the UDF reader, the computer even crashed once and said it was the UDF reader's fault. So,
well, have you tried installing this stuff from the original CD without downloading things from Roxio?
Yeah.
I mean, it would seem to me that part of the problem is you've got some stuff on the machine that came from Roxio, some stuff you downloaded from the CD, some stuff you downloaded from the website, and they may be incompatible versions. I would wipe all that out and try from scratch with just the CD. We have to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave and with all of us on Soundbites.
What's the matter with you? I think your brain is going soft from all that comedy you're playing with that young girl. Never tell anybody outside the family what you're thinking again.
What a great movie. It's like watching my family home movies. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And in 55 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. Okay, everybody. It's that time once again. All right, kiddies, go get your footy jammies on, grab your mug of hot cocoa, and sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocker. Because if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Well, this one I got to do for my sister. She listens to the show. As a matter of fact, she had one up me. You know, I had the one stent in. Yeah. But then when I had my heart attack, well, my sister had to do me better and do 7.
Wow.
Yeah. So this is for you, Sue. All right, you idiots! And I mean that literally. I had a friend. I still have him, hopefully, as a friend. Who is now $48,000 in debt due to stolen identity. Any of you idiots that click on or answer any of the emails that you get from whether it's banks, special deals, opting out of stuff, I don't feel sorry for you. No bank, I don't care if it's the president himself sending you this message saying, you guys got to answer this or go do this or the PayPal or this.
Well, the big one now is the extra tax refund we're supposed to be getting.
Oh, yeah, there's scams out
there. We need your credit card number in order to process your tax return.
Yeah.
No, you don't.
No, but I wish I could come out with a program that would literally, a hand would come out and slap you, three or four times at least to wake you up. Do not, under any circumstances, answer or reply to any of those. I don't care if you're in doubt, call, pick up that thing that's been around longer than the computer. It's called a telephone! Call them up and say, gee, talk to a live person at the bank or wherever. If they can't, then you don't answer it. Because a lot of these scams are hoping that you don't take the time to do this. And they steal your information, and oh, like my friend is now $48,000 in debt and still trying to clear it up. You know, they don't care. These folks out there that are stealing your identity don't give a rat's butt. If, you know, that's the last few grand that you had in your savings and anything else, because, hey, they've stolen it. Too bad. So sad. You're hosed. So by all means, I mean, as official as it looks, or as convenient as it looks, or these deals that seem too good to be true, like my grandparents always said.
Yeah.
They are.
Exactly.
Don't listen to them or ignore them.
All righty, kiddies. We're going to give Uncle Dave his shot. So it's time for you to rinse out your cocoa mug. Get out of your footy jammies, back into your real clothes. If we can manage to slip that sedative to him, it's the end of another story hour with Uncle Dave. I feel the peace vibes coming back. And in the next hour...
I didn't
hour,
drag you in this time.
Yes, you did. Thank you. In the next hour, we are going to have the CEO of Craigslist as one of our guests. That's right. Jim Buckmaster, the CEO of Craigslist, will be calling in so we can talk to him about Craigslist. So if you have any questions, call in. Tell Rob, our magnificent screener, producer, all the many, many hats that he has back there. He does it all. We watch in awe as he does those things. And we'll try to move you to the top of the line if it's a question about the guy from Craigslist. If you say it's a question for the guy from Craigslist, and then you don't ask a question about Craigslist, we'll hang up on you. So, but we'll be, other than that, we'll be, well, you know, no lying, no lying on the radio. There's no lying in radio. Oh, wouldn't that be nice? There's almost nothing but lying in radio. But us, the bastion of truth, we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, who has, again, generously donated an entire morning of his time to record the show, clean it up, make it nice, and get it up into the archives.
If make you guys sound good.
Well, somebody's got to do it, and God bless you. It's amazing you've got the talent to do it. And, of course, Rob Linton, who keeps us on the straight and narrow no matter how hard we wiggle. I'm Nick Francesco. It's 59 minutes after the hour. Back on the other side of the news with more sound bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. You're listening to sound bites. Now, normally in this segment, we talk about what goes on our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like to remind you. And all the other neat stuff. But we have a very, very special guest on the line today with us, all the way from wherever he is Jim Buckmaster, who is the CEO of Craigslist. And if you haven't ever heard of Craigslist, you've been hiding under some sort of rock somewhere. Mr. Buckmaster, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me on.
Sure, may I call you Jim?
You may.
Thank you. And you can call me Al. Okay, anyway, I'm Nick Francesco. I'm Nick, and we have Steve and Dave and Chris, and the guy on the phone is Rob, and so you know who we all are. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Craigslist to set us up?
Well, first of all, we're in San Francisco.
Ah, there you go.
Craig Newmark started Craigslist as an email list of San Francisco events back in 1995, and it's kind of slowly but surely branched out from there to the point today where we have 450 cities and countries, and the site's getting 10 billion page views per month.
Which makes it the eighth most visited website in the English language.
Yeah, and it's full-featured, classified across all the areas you normally think of, like jobs and housing, buying and selling stuff, personals, romance, etc.
Yeah, for those of you who haven't been there, it's very hard to think of something you can't find on Craigslist.
Exactly.
Exactly. But I do have to ask you this one question. How many times a month do you get a call from some web designer saying, you know, you should web 2.0 your site?
We get those fairly frequently. And Craigslist, as you know, the design's more kind of web 0.0, not even really 1.0. But it loads fast and it's accessible for people with all kinds of outdated software and computers. And
right.
It's usable by people with low vision or who are blind.
Right, right. And that's very, very, very useful. And I got to tell you, considering you're the number 8 website in the English language, I don't know really why you would bother to do any of that other stuff.
Well, we certainly listen for our users with suggestions, but oddly enough, our users don't suggest that we web 2.0-ify it or change the design radically. Most of those suggestions do come from web designers.
Yeah, I bet they do, who are looking for you to pay them. At what point did you guys suddenly wake up one morning and say, holy mother of pearl, what have we started?
Well, we're not actually early risers. But
they're in San Francisco, remember?
Yeah, absolutely.
But, yeah, none of us ever expected it to get as large as it has, that's for sure.
What are you running on? I mean, you must have multiple servers all joined together.
Yeah, we're running about 200 servers in each of 2 co-location facilities with the typical LAMP stack, Linux, Apache, MySQL,
right.
Perl.
Right. This is just an astonishing thing. It is very fast to look for anything. And like I said, it's all there. Sometimes you have to be a little inventive to figure out where the thing you're looking for is. But you've done a really nice job of organizing Craigslist. And for those of you who are looking to join in and play, it's at craigslist.org, craigslist.org.
And we have a specific Rochester one, rochester.craigslist.org.
Right.
And where you can save on shipping and handling costs.
Right, exactly. And that's available. And there's a link on our website at soundbites.org as well. Just everything. Do you folks have any rules about what does or doesn't go on?
Sure. We have terms of use, and there's posted site guidelines pertaining to particular categories, so there certainly are rules.
And you must use massive amounts of transfer every month. And how do you guys feel about this whole net neutrality thing that's going on?
We're in favor of net neutrality, and as far as we can tell, just about everyone is in favor of it, with the exception of big telecom companies and their vendors.
Yeah, we should be calling it net discrimination, and then we would all be against it.
When, yeah, right.
Yeah, when AT&T comes out and says, yeah, we want net neutrality, meaning we're going to charge you more for your stuff. No.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's the telecoms trying to leverage their last-mile connectivity. They sometimes forget that public right-of-way that they're making their money from is kind of a public resource that shouldn't be used that way.
Right, right. What amazes me is the breadth of the stuff that's on here. You know, you've got personals, you've got the for sale, and everything. You even got gigs. I mean, if you're an actor looking for a job in Rochester, there's a section for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know how active the acting community is there, but I'll take
there's a very, very long page of stuff that's being looked for there, theater auditions. Community auditions, bands looking for drummers, things like that. People looking for crew. You know, you want to, if it's always been your dream to be a roadie for a rock band, Craigslist is the place to find your job. Computer gigs, people looking for, here we go, web 2.0 programmer. Probably not looking for fixing Craigslist, but, you know, people are looking for people to sell stuff for them on eBay and teach them QuickBooks and do all this stuff. There's an amazing mass of things that you can do on Craigslist that I never would have thought would be. Oh, here we go. We have a listener called in, wanted to know how Craigslist makes money. What's your income model?
So we do charge for job postings in 10 large U.S. cities now. So if an employer wants to attract new employees, that's one thing we charge for. The only other thing is for brokered apartment rental listings in New York City.
So I suspect they're very big.
Yeah.
Yeah, those few areas cover everything else.
Those areas probably come and go.
Yeah, I bet they do. So most of the stuff on here is free to send in as well as free to answer.
Yeah, virtually everything is free. And certainly from the standpoint of an end user, there's no fees of any kind.
It's kind of astonishing. You know, I'm an old hippie from the 60s, but it is kind of astonishing that this sort of loosey-goosey, love each other, just let's put it up and see what happens sort of thing, not only has grown to be this huge, but also that you can make enough money at least to sustain it and to get some people to work on it regularly. It's just an amazing thing that, you know, it's the Creative Commons put to good use. People sustain the site themselves.
Yeah. Well, we keep our central costs low. We still only have 25 employees. Turns out most internet companies with large staff, most of those folks are involved with trying to maximize revenue.
Right.
Since we're not trying to do that, we don't need all those people. So we don't have a sales department. We don't have marketing people or business development or any of those things.
Okay, now wait a minute. You don't have marketing people. You don't have a development department. You're not out looking to screw the consumer. What kind of CEO are you anyway?
Hence the fact that we get written up as being communists and anarchists and socialists.
Well, anarchy, in the original sense of the word, I think defines Craigslist. No central authority and everybody doing whatever works for the common good.
We do try to get out of the way to the extent possible, since users know what they're trying to accomplish, and we figure we're successful if we're able to get, to the extent that we're able to get out of the way and just let people do what they need to do.
It's just an astonishing model.
Do you see yourself growing into what eBay has become, which started in a similar area in San Jose with sort of a, you know, similar thing? The first thing sold on eBay was a broken laser pointer.
How was it? I didn't know that.
Well, according to the Wikipedia, and we know how accurate that is.
Yeah, right.
Well, one difference between eBay and Craigslist, other than the fact that they're just buying and selling, and we have other areas like housing and jobs, etc. Even within buying and selling, on eBay, typically transactions occur between distant folks who don't meet in person, and they ship the item and use PayPal, whereas on Craigslist, in almost all cases, it's local people meeting in person to do business.
Well, it is just astounding. What's next for Craig? Do you even have a five-year plan? I mean, what five-year plan would have ended up with this? I mean, it just, it is an astonishing thing, but I don't know how you would have planned for that. What is next for Craigslist?
Well, we have a kind of an organic model where we're just kind of always listening for what users seem to be concerned with and what they'd like to see us do next in terms of incremental features or bug fixes or new cities that we could add or new categories, et cetera, and just try to keep plugging away at that. One larger scale project ongoing now is developing foreign language support. We've put Spanish out there and working on some additional languages.
Right. Well, that's got to be hard. We have a caller who'd like to know how something gets flagged on Craigslist.
Yeah. So each posting on the site has a series of flagging links where if a user sees an ad that seems inappropriate or out of place, they can flag it. If enough users agree and also flag it, the ad comes down automatically without intervention from us.
Right. Is there a way?
Yeah, so one of your guys doesn't have to read 9 billion pages a month, right?
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Is there a way to search nationally for something, as opposed to just in case nobody has it locally? I guess
we do get requests for that, but the feeling here, anyway, is that to provide national or search across all sites would undercut the locality of each individual site. All of a sudden, users who are putting something up hoping for all local responses, which is what they kind of expect from Craigslist, all of a sudden they're getting responses from across the country talking about shipping and ways, you know, payment methods, et cetera. And really, our site isn't set up for those kind of transactions. We don't have a rating system. We don't have payment methods. We don't participate in the transaction. There's really no way of making that long-distance transaction safe. With the site set up the way Craigslist is.
So basically, host globally, serve locally.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I really want to thank you very much. We've just spent 20 minutes with Jim Buckmaster, who is the CEO of Craigslist. Thank you so much, Jim, for spending time with us. God bless you on your site. And if you ever need an assistant CEO, considering apparently just sit around and ask people what they want, call me.
Absolutely will.
Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, it's Sound Bites. I know some of you have been holding on a long time. We'll get right to you. I do want to talk very quickly about the poll. Toshiba put HD DVD out of its misery Thursday. It will cease manufacturing HD DVD equipment. This leaves Blu-ray as the presumptive victor in the irrelevant optical disc format war. It now must face up to the real competition, the continuing success of DVD, and the growing popularity of direct downloads, both on the internet and on-demand cable TV. Walmart said it won't carry HD DVD stuff, so it looks like it's all about Blu-ray. So our question this week is, which high-def format do you have? And the choices were HD DVD, Blu-ray, waiting for the shakeout, and not interested. So far, waiting for the shakeout has over half the votes, and only 4 people actually have Blu-ray. 5 more people have HD DVD. So join us on the Soundbites website to do that. But we really need to get back to the phones. These poor people have been holding forever. Our next caller is Ron from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Ron. Thank you so much for holding.
Oh, I've enjoyed your program quite a bit. And Mr. Buckmeister, was it?
Buckmeister, yeah.
Yeah, he was a very interesting person.
Good, thank you.
I have a problem with the printer. I bring up, let's say, Delta Airlines on the desktop. I get everything I want, and I go to print it. And what happens is I get a bar graph across the top of the sheet of paper, and then everything I want to print out is crammed into the top left-hand side of the paper.
This is very common when you're printing websites. Websites are designed to be viewed, not printed. So they can do really strange things when you're printing.
Oh.
Many times, somewhere on the website, you will see a button that says printable version or print this.
Yeah.
And printable view, and it eliminates all the menus and the ads and everything.
Side stuff.
And all the stuff on the sides, and you get just what you really wanted to print in the first place.
Right. Oh. Well, for example, on the Sirti Tango website, if you go to print the main page,
yes,
it prints without all the side banners and et cetera, et cetera. And it's a really simple thing to do, but many lazy programmers don't do that.
Well, this is a ticket. Get the ticket is what we're trying to do.
Right. Yeah. I believe there's a set. Well, I don't know about Delta sites specifically, but I know that many of them have a separate button sort of hidden somewhere on the page that says print the ticket.
Oh.
So that's a separate thing to look for. Make sure you find that, and that should do it for you.
Well, I tell you, what we did,
I'm sorry, I cannot understand you.
Yeah, you're breaking up.
Hello? I couldn't understand.
Yeah, if you can't find a button that says printable view or print this or something like that, what you can do is oftentimes you can just select through what you're looking for, click, drag, select it, copy it, open like Notepad or WordPad or something, paste it in, and then you're
printing. Well, something that'll let you do HTML.
Or text. Or if you get just it on the screen, the ticket in the screen, hit the print screen.
Do a screen print.
Go to paint, paste it in there, and then print it off.
Or to Word.
Yeah,
or Word. Right. Now, the other thing sometimes is...
Well, wait, before you pass that out, let me explain exactly what happens there. When you hit print screen, it takes a picture of the page and then puts it in the clipboard. So now you could go into something like Word and say paste, and what was in the clipboard, the picture of the screen, will print out. And if you set the thing to landscape or whatever, you should get a pretty decent sized view of that. I'm sorry, Steve. Go ahead.
And, well, I say some websites also have an email this link where and that will open up an email in mostly just plain text.
10-to-1
oftentimes you print that.
He's just got to scroll down. That's what a lot of folks don't do because the information takes up, depending on their screen
or
size, so much
scroll to
space.
The right, off in the upper right corner.
Yeah. Right.
You got to scroll, and there's usually a button that says click here to print.
You got to read the fine print because that button can be hard to find. You got to search.
You would think that they would, well.
But
whatever.
Depending on the screen size, if they're doing 600. Yeah.
If it's bringing up a ticket that you're supposed to print, you'd think it would be in a printable view.
Yeah, you would think that, wouldn't you? Yeah.
That would take, like Nick says, time and effort.
That would take time and effort and brains on the part of the people. They've got they want their information to be tops. If you want to print it, it's your job to figure out how and where and how.
It. Nick's going to go off on a rant.
You don't want me ranting. We let Dave rant, but you really don't want me ranting. When I get off on a rant, we're about as done as we're going to get. So that's not something you want. Do I have time for another call? He doesn't know.
Jeez.
He's on the phone. He's chatting with somebody.
Let's talk to Ginny.
Chatting with somebody? I'm talking to your listeners, for crying out loud. You think I'm, you know, just talking with buddies?
Of course I knew that. If you were talking with buddies, you would be smiling instead of scowling and screaming and pounding the table. Do I have time for another call, or are we taking a break here? We got time for another call. So our next caller is Ginny from... You got me all screwed up now, Dave. You started it, and it's your fault. Ginny,
you
want to
rant. You want to rant.
And I want to rant. Welcome, Ginny. What's your question?
Good afternoon. You're all having a good time, aren't you?
We are. I don't know about our listeners, but we don't really care. We're happy, and that's really all
that counts. It's a good time in our minds.
Exactly.
Let's put it
that way. My question is, problem happened a couple times in the last month. I put my surge protector on, and the computer started by itself and came on and told me that the clock was wrong entry in the BIOS.
Okay.
So I went in the BIOS and I fixed it. Next couple times I did it fine.
Yeah.
It happened again yesterday.
Probably your battery on your motherboard is getting ready to go.
I thought so.
And this happens frequently to people who use a power strip, and then when they're done with the computer, they turn off the power strip. You actually kill power to the computer, and so the battery is being used all the time.
Everything out of the wall, though.
Right. So the battery is being used all the time to maintain your date and time and your boot settings and your video settings, things like that. So the battery wears out faster. If you leave the computer plugged into the wall, there's a trickle charge running into the computer, maintaining all that information so the battery doesn't wear out as fast.
I see.
But during our thunderstorm seasons, and, and especially around here, definitely unplug it.
Now,
but,
where can you purchase a battery?
Depends on what kind it is.
Yeah. Is it a desktop or a laptop?
Desktop.
It's probably the CR22.
32,
something like that. If you're
They're
comfortable, you can open your computer, find the battery on the motherboard, pull it out, and then go to an electronics store. Even Wegmans sells. Most often it's a lithium wafer.
Yeah,
like
Radio
Shack.
Or
like a watch battery.
Okay,
Walmart.
Fine. Great.
Right.
And you would suggest putting it in before it actually dies?
Oh, yeah.
But it probably is dead now because the date and time
is
being lost.
Yeah, it's going.
Yeah.
It's going.
Yeah, I mean, you won't lose any information on your hard drive or that.
You'll just have to put the time and date in one more
time. Remember the olden days, we would have to go into BIOS and set the cylinders, heads, and sectors because
it
forgot all of that.
Oh, my heavens.
That was our number one question. How do I know how many cylinders, heads, and sectors are on my hard drive?
I used to have a little booklet.
Yep.
It had all the old hard drives in it.
Yep. Okay.
But there you go. Thanks, Jenny.
Yeah, otherwise, matter of fact, we had one other caller wanted to know where my shop and Steve's shop is. NYPC is located at 70 Empire Boulevard. We're open Monday through Fridays, 9 to 5, and that's just about a half mile up from Dan's Craft.
And Jesse Group, we're located at 7716 Victor Menden Road, which is Route 251, just off of 96, about a mile past Eastview Mall.
And I live in the city just outside the free,
free
Wi-Fi zone.
I looked at the Greece map to make sure it wasn't near where I used to live in Greece. It wasn't, so I'm happy.
Okay, right.
And those who need to know where I live already do.
Exactly. Our next caller is Al from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Al. What's your question?
My question is about what software would I want to use for video conferencing? And are there good ones? And what do I have to watch out for?
Well, the big trick is that you have to use the same program the other end is using. So if they're already using, whoever you want to talk to, if they're already using something, you have to use what they have.
I have had an amazing amount of success with Skype.
Right. Skype is probably the biggest one. It's a telephone program that also does video calls. And Skype is free for computer to computer. And then they have very, very low rates if you're going computer to telephone or telephone to computer. There's also instant messaging programs like AOL Instant Messenger and ICQ and MSN, and many of those originally designed for just typing back and forth now also support audio and video conferencing as well. So you can approach it from the computer side, adding video to it, or you can approach it from the telephone side, adding computer to it. And Skype seems to be sort of the generic, well, not really generic, but the more universally used video conferencing. A lot of the podcasts use it for interviewing people. Because it is free computer to computer.
Fantastic.
And as long as all of you are using Skype, you're all good. Skype is available for every operating system.
Yeah.
So.
Which is a big nice thing too, yeah. And now with so many computers coming with video cameras built in, you have a video conferencing suite built into your laptop instead of paying multi-million dollar video suites that we used to have to rent by the hour.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. All right, our next caller. Stephanie from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Stephanie. What's your question?
I have a new Zune 30 megabyte player that I cannot get. I can't get it installed. I get so far and it tells me that I'm missing a driver. I feel like I'm going in circles. I'm at my wit's end.
Was there a CD that came with the Zune?
There was a CD, and when I put it in, it told me that there was an error, but when I went into the CD through my computer, I was able to load from there. But ultimately, what I had to do was go find updated software through Googling for it. And now I just feel like I'm at a dead end. I don't know what to do.
Do you remember where you went?
It says your Zune device is not detected by your computer or the Zune software.
Well, the Zune is from Microsoft, so you should get the software directly from Microsoft. Make sure you didn't download something else. And what operating system are you running on your computer?
XP Media.
With Service Pack 2?
Yes.
And you've got all the latest updates?
I went through it. It said I had all the updates that I needed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Does it say what driver you're missing in the Zune install?
No.
Yeah, see, because there could be a driver that's there, but it might have to be re-registered.
Did you have another media player before that?
No, I didn't.
We've heard some issues. If you were using Music Match or you're using iTunes, the Zune doesn't work well, and you have to remove the other one first.
This is my first player. I'm ready to return.
Well, yeah. I don't have a Zune, so I have really no idea what that missing DLL would be. If you uninstall all of that stuff and start from scratch, I'm sorry, what operating system did you say you had?
XP Media.
Oh, boy. You should really just be able to plug the Zune player in without even...
No, the Zune has its own proprietary format. It does not comply with Microsoft Place for sure.
Even though it's Microsoft.
Even though it's a Microsoft product, it's a real big joke.
Go figure.
Yeah. And so for people that have purchased the Place for Sure music from other websites and other media
and
players, you cannot use it on your Zune.
Stephanie, knowing that DLL is critical because, you know, knowing what DLL to replace or that's having an issue, if you uninstall it, reinstall it, and get that issue again, write it down, and you can email either Steve or I, and maybe we can help you from there.
Okay.
But we do have to have some idea what that DLL is.
That's the key that's stopping you from probably being able to use it.
Yeah, there's
your advice is to uninstall everything that I've installed.
Yeah.
And when you get that error message, write it down.
Yeah. Okay. Take your time and slowly click on things. And if an error message pops up or it gives you a problem, write it down.
Okay.
All right.
And I found there's a website called zuneboards.com, which are people solving each other's Zune problems, and they have a posting on common problems with the Zune software and how to fix them, and I'll post that link on our website as well.
So you can check that out also.
But yeah, apparently you're not alone, if that helps any.
Yeah, right. There are a whole bunch of miserable people out there.
Well, not a whole bunch, because it's a Zune.
Steve Ray, ladies and gentlemen. Dozens and dozens.
That's all the podcasts and website are talking about that. The Microsoft releases this Zune player that does not work with the Microsoft's Place for Sure. If you've bought music at any other store, iTunes, Amazon, Napster, Rhapsody, it will not work on your Zune. So they're violating their own software.
There are so many different divisions within Microsoft. Yeah. I'm shocked they even spell the name the same twice.
Well, that's why on the new cars now, what is it? Board to get that Microsoft Sync. There's been a lot of pictures and all that.
Where a car
stops and has to reboot.
Right.
Got a blue screen.
Right. And that's the reason we don't have flying cars today. Our next call, would you fly something that had the Microsoft operating system running it? Well, our next caller is Bob from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
How you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. Thanks. I called about a month ago about being able to download videos, like movies that I purchased for my daughter, and putting them on her iPod.
Yeah.
And you guys told me to download Handbrake. I downloaded Handbrake for the XP, and for some reason, I'm unable to run it. I try to run Handbrake, and it's telling me that I've run program 1.1, and I need 2.1. It says I don't have the proper run program for it.
And you're sure you got the right version for your OS, because it runs on a lot of different OSs.
Are you talking about Java or
There are two versions of Handbrake. One is for the GUI and one is a command line interface. Do you know which one you downloaded?
Well, I think it was like the third one on your list. Or on the list.
Does it say CLI?
I'm not too sure about that.
Check. You might have the CLI version and have difficulty using it. You need the GUI, for one thing. That may or may not be your problem, but let's check that first.
Yeah, and there are multiple versions, and they require, I think, .NET in the background. So you may have to update, run the latest updates for your operating system. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes, 40 minutes after the hour, Sound Bites, 1180 WHAM.
Call Wham now at 222-1180. Star Left Teams on Wham.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we may not be the first-rate sports team city, but we are the city with the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. Amazon's data storage service was down for several hours on Friday morning, leaving businesses that rely on the service offline. As of around 9 a.m. on the left coast, the issue had been resolved, according to an Amazon employee posting on a user group forum. She said that the company plans to post technical information about exactly what happened, but the priority is to make sure the system is stable. Companies use Amazon's simple storage service known as S3 to store and quickly retrieve large amounts of data, often to run websites and services. The press spokesperson said that one of three geographical locations for the service was unreachable for about 2 hours, but it was operating at 99% of normal performance before 7 a.m. on the West Coast. So many customers appeared not to have gotten the communication. They complained on the forums about a lack of information from Amazon. One suggests Amazon could at least have published a message on the front page of the web services site so the customers would be aware that the problem wasn't at their end. Gustavo, a user in Brazil, said that his company hosts more than 30,000 images from a large television station in Brazil. Now we are having several problems because of this S3 issue, he wrote. My company chose to work with Amazon because of its reliability. Late last year, Amazon introduced that new service. And a new service level agreement, rather, for S3 that guaranteed 99.9% uptime each month. If the service slips below that level, the company promised to provide service credits to certain users, but that doesn't help with their reputation. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dan from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dan. What's your question?
Good afternoon. I called last week, and I downloaded SpyBot's latest version, 1.5.
Right.
I also installed T-Timer, which is part of the SpyBot program and also part of the Security Tangle. My question is, I sort of have an idea what T-Timer is supposed to do. Are there pros and cons? Should I be running it constantly? It currently does start up when I turn on my machine. Even today, when I started up my machine, I got a warning from them saying that an entry, ISUSPM startup, was changed or wanted to do something. I denied it because I didn't know what that was.
Yeah, well T-Timer... it's a new tool from SpyBot S&D, which constantly monitors all the processes that are called and initiated. It detects known malicious processes that are trying to start and terminates them and gives you some options on how to deal with that in the future.
When you don't know what the process is, what would you advise?
Well, that's the real problem,
right.
Isn't it?
Google that process name and see if you can figure out what it does.
That's pretty much all you can do. There are a couple of sites on the net that purport, at least, to tell you what every process does, but none of them that I've seen so far is comprehensive.
Do you gentlemen run T-Timer constantly on your machines, or should I?
Well, I run a Linux box, so I don't, but a lot of people do, and it seems to be very, very helpful for them because it is one of the few programs that monitors all those back-end processes.
Yeah, you guys like do advise that using it if you're running Windows.
Yeah, how fast is your machine?
I don't know the answer to that question right now.
It's
pretty new. It's only about a year old.
All right, if it's a gigahertz or more, I would say run it in the background. It won't slow you down at all.
Okay.
And it could be very useful.
It could be. All right, gentlemen, thank you.
All right, thanks. That kind of question is difficult to answer without knowing your specifics.
Yeah.
And so many processes, especially the malicious processes, hide inside a legitimate process.
Right.
That you may end up killing your email or killing your web browser because it's hiding in that process.
Right, although mostly it knows about a lot of those. All right, we're going to take another quick break. To make room for the little economic dramas that are so important to us coming back to see you every month. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Wright, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you, including those of you who are online. I have no idea how many that is at the moment. 48 minutes after the hour, Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 52 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbite.
Before we get completely back to the calls, I need to wish my wife, my beautiful wife, a happy birthday today.
Happy birthday to you. We can't sing any more of it.
We're
Clear Channel. We probably have every right there is on
Earth. We probably own the rights to that song, yes. So, Shirley, I hope you're listening, Shirley. Happy birthday.
And if you're not listening,
why not?
He
just covered his butt.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. You know, remember all those iPhones that they couldn't find out? You know, there were only like 2/3 of the iPhones sold were activated.
Activated on AT&T.
Right. The other 400,000 of them are in China.
Where they're not even sold legally yet.
Right. China Mobile, the biggest wire carrier in China, said there were 400,000 unlocked iPhones operating on its network at the end of 2007. If it's true, that represents more than 10% of the 3.7 million iPhones Apple sold last year. Market research firm Instat, which included the stat in an email newsletter on Friday, said that the total was four times what they had previously estimated. That helps explain where many of the missing iPhones have wound up. This is mixed news for Apple. The company makes a profit on every iPhone it sells, whether it's activated in via one of its wireless carriers or not. But a big part of Steve Jobs' iPhone income comes from carriers, which pay Apple a percentage of the service revenue they get from iPhone owners. Some analysts estimate that AT&T, Apple's exclusive U.S. carrier partner, pays Apple's $15 per month per iPhone subscriber, $360 over the length of a two-year contract, which is pure profit. Of course, Apple's not getting any of that money for unlocked iPhones in China. If 400,000 is an accurate number, that represents a loss of $144 million over the next 2 years. True, for Apple, that's chump change, but still.
And at the recent Cell World, something like that, it was an industry inside trade show for handset makers and vendors. More and more phones are coming out with the features the iPhone had in it. And several other handset makers are trying to negotiate deals now to get a cut of the minutes. Apple is the first handset maker to get a cut of the minutes.
Yeah.
And it's setting a bad precedent for the carriers.
Yeah, I don't doubt that. Now, I've already told you my Apple story for the week. Sending my daughter's iPod because the lock switch wouldn't work. They sent it back and said there was nothing wrong with it, and the lock switch still doesn't work. So if any of you Apple reps are out there listening to this show, and I know you all do every week, I'm not really happy with Apple's support and service this week.
This works. There was a big story this week about Rush Limbaugh complaining about problems he was having with his Mac on his show, and Apple called him, and Leo Laporte was getting the red ring of death on his Xbox 360, and Microsoft called him. And
yeah, I'll guarantee you nobody calls me.
Yeah,
I will lay money on the table that nobody calls me. All right, our next caller is Bob on a cell phone. Welcome, Bob. What's your question? Bob, are you an Apple rep?
Me? No, I'm not an Apple.
See?
Yeah.
All right, go ahead, Bob. What's your question?
I have a relatively new computer with Vista. I've been running Office 2002, and last week I tried to sync my Windows CE telephone to my Outlook, and it locked up, and a little error box came on, and ordering the error box was like black screen. I got another message that said I should upgrade to a newer version of Office. I can't close out of it. I can't remove Outlook. My whole Outlook is locked up. And I've
on the phone or on your computer?
No, on the computer. I can't remove Outlook program. I took it in somewhere. They didn't know what to do with it. And the rest of the computer works, but Outlook is frozen. And I'm wondering if getting the new Office 2007 will be a fix for it. I don't even know.
It may be. What I might suggest first is uninstall Office, the Office you have.
It won't let you uninstall Office.
What happens when you try?
I didn't do it. They just told me it couldn't be done. Couldn't take it off.
Well, they're wrong.
Yeah, it can be.
It can be done one way or another.
Well, you can.
If the uninstall doesn't work, you can manually remove it
from the registry.
Right.
Yeah. I guess they did say you got to start messing with the registry, and they didn't do that.
Right. What's likely happened is that you had an update on the Windows CE device, or the WinCE device, as we call them, and it insists on Office 2007. Microsoft doesn't much care what you want.
Yeah.
They do what's best for their bottom line, and their best for their bottom line is for you to buy 2007. Whether you want it or not, too bad for you. So basically, it's possible that installing 2007 over 2002 would work, but I can't promise that. I think your best bet, bring it into either Dave or Steve and have them take a look at it and see what...
And especially since there's a problem with your 2002 now, 2007 may not be able to install.
Right.
Did they even have 2002 or was it...
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
Well, it was called Office XP, but it was 2002. Oh, right. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's your best bet at this point. One of the things they can do is at least attempt to back up all of your mail and contacts and stuff before they do that.
Have you tried reinstalling the XP version over itself?
Yeah, I don't think that works. I did happen to have a backup that day on a different computer, so I'm okay with the data if I have to change.
Yeah, but no, what I'm saying, though, is your Outlook CD, have you tried installing it over itself again?
They did.
Without uninstalling.
They did, and I don't think that worked. I think it's so locked up that it just won't let you do anything.
Okay.
And they did say something about the registry. I have to admit, I was having some trouble getting my phone to sync. I got pissed off, and I think I clicked my mouse about 25 times, and that's when it started.
Yeah, you probably clicked on something you really kind of shouldn't have. All right. Give Dave or Steve a call and see what happens there. We are done for another week. I want to thank everyone who called in. I want to apologize to all those to whom we did not get. Call in earlier and more often next time, the Chicago style of calling. I specifically want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, the mighty Chris Reich, who just comes in here every week, whether we want to, for no discernible reason, to record all this stuff on the show for us. And of course, the wonderful Rob Linton, who keeps us on the straight and narrow and just really needs to have his ego stroked every once in a while, or he throws some little hissy fit or other. And so I really want to thank him. I'm Nick Francesco. It's 59 minutes after the hour. See you next week on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.